Welcome, everybody. This is You Get the Blessing. I'm Bo Mitchell. This is Marvin Gaye. Wake up. That's not my real voice. Music right there, folks. Next verse, don't we skip?
Yes, great song, great song.
Okay, one more verse, folks. I know you're still waking up, but listen to this lyric. It's a good one right here. That's enough. Okay, this is You Get the Blessing. I'm Bo Mitchell. That was Marvin Gaye singing Heard It Through the Grapevine, and that's part of why we do this is we're part of that grapevine. You tune in, and you get blessed by listening to this show because we introduce you to guests who are spending their lives doing good things for the cause of Christ and for this community. And our guest today is Skip Starr, and Skip is with Refuge Inglewood, and we're going to talk about that in a little bit. But Skip, welcome to the program.
Thanks. Good to be here.
And we want to start by letting you give us a little background on yourself and where you were raised and what it was like around your place as a kid.
Well, I was raised, I'm the oldest of six boys.
No kidding.
Span of 18 years between me and the youngest. Four of us ended up attorneys. We were raised in...
What was the problem there? Was your father an attorney or y'all were in legal trouble your whole life?
Only two of us practiced. Most of the other... I never practiced, but I used it as a good stepping stone for business. Raised in...
I'm joking. I love attorneys and I love CPAs because 23 years ago, I got in trouble in a real estate deal and didn't have a very good attorney and ended up going to prison for kind of a strange thing. But I'm not joking. I love attorneys.
I got you covered because I'm also an accountant. So.
Oh, good. Well, I knew I liked a lot of things about you.
And was raised in Detroit. Went to University of Michigan, go blue. And
what years were you there?
64 to 68.
Wow. So they actually had a football team then?
No, we were terrible. We had a good basketball team, Cassie Russell and the
Ooh.
Boys. Yeah, but
did they win the championship?
No, but we got to the quarterfinals then. Yeah. But
go blue.
While I was in college, was drafted, joined Navy ROTC so I could finish, did three tours afterwards, graduated at 10 a.m., commissioned at 1 p.m., and next day was on my way to Vietnam. And I did three tours in Nam, came back, found what I thought was going to be the woman to live with me forever.
Wait a minute. Let's stay on Nam a second.
Yeah.
You had to do three tours, or did you volunteer for the second
tour? No. I was supposed to, because of the hazard duty that I was involved with, I was supposed to be relieved after the first tour, but it didn't happen. And then they didn't relieve me for the third tour. And my father was a World War II hero. He was shot down over France. He was a bomber pilot, only one to survive the crash. And so he was getting very upset that this was all happening and I wasn't being relieved. And you could apply for early outs then. So I applied for early out, but I told my dad it was useless because the captain's not going to let it happen because he needs me here. And he said, well, tell the captain he has to forward it to the admiral. And I told him, and the captain was mad. He said, well, the admiral's going to turn it down too. So I went back in country for a period of 5 days a week. And then I'd come out. And when I got back after that first time back in, I was told the captain wants to see you in the stateroom, and I go up there and he starts yelling and screaming at me, who the hell do you know, and on and on and on, and he tosses it. It was an order from the Secretary of Navy releasing me early from the Navy, and come to find
out. Try not to swear, by the way, Skip. This is a Christian program.
Okay.
Just kidding.
My
who the hell do you know is probably exactly what he said. Yeah. And now those are your papers to get out.
Yeah, and my the guy number two at the Naval Department flew with my dad in World War II.
So yeah,
he just made one call and I was out.
Three terms was enough.
Yes,
though.
It was more than enough.
I interrupted you, and yeah. You were going to talk about your.
So we went back, got out of the Navy, went back to law school, and my family had moved to Omaha, so I went to Creighton Law School. Did 3 years of law school and 2 years, senior year of law school, started my first bank. No money, found a partner, money partner, put the deal together, started my first bank. Next few years, I had a brother that was a year younger that was an attorney. He came to me, he had a client that owned a bank, and so we bought the bank. I sold my interest in the first bank. My brother and I bought the bank together, bought a couple other banks. Then my dad came to me and said, look, I'm going to opt out of the company that I'm running. Got several $1 million in stock options. I'm going to cash them in and we're going to go buy banks. And we owned about 20 banks in Iowa, Kansas, Nebraska, and Colorado. Brother died. My father died within a period of a year of each other. So suddenly I had my four younger brothers and my partners, and that wasn't working. So we sold all the banks, had more money than I'd ever need, but that wasn't enough. And got heavy into real estate, lots of land in the foothills. Hayman Fire hit, highly leveraged, a lot of partners in different deals, construction companies and so on. Highly leveraged, Hayman Fire hit, value of the property dropped to nothing. The banks were on my butt about paying. I couldn't pay, was juggling funds, doing fraud, got caught. Was facing 94 years in prison. My criminal attorney got me down to a plea bargain of 2 to 22 years, told me that I'm going to get the 22 years, that I'm going to go before the toughest judge.
So you had actually done a bunch of stuff knew was wrong.
It was intentional, it was wrong.
So desperate men make some desperate choices, yes. And you were making a few desperate choices.
Some very stupid ones. And hurt some people that, you know, my investors knew me. Some of them, part of them were my brothers, and I hurt them deeply. And was sentenced to 6 years in prison here in Colorado.
Year did that happen?
That was in 2005.
Okay.
Did 18 months. Came out, and I wasn't at a prison. I was at a minimum security prison. It was like a dormitory in Canyon City. No fences, no walls. My job, I was chief accountant for the dairy farm. They gave me a vehicle. I had my own office. It was like going to work every day.
You know, I was in something like that, but it felt like prison.
Oh, it was. But, I mean, it was still, I mean, I'm not trying to belittle the feeling because you, but the night I was sentenced, 2 days after, I was still in jail waiting to go to prison. I got a letter from my family, my four brothers. One of my brothers had died a few years earlier. And basically, it was a Dear John letter saying, we never want to hear from you again. Don't contact your mother. We told your mother the night you were sentenced, we told your mother you were going to prison. She had a stroke, and she lost her short-term memory.
Gee.
So that's
nice to get at that point in your life already crushed.
Yeah, well, that destroyed me.
Sure.
Because I love my mother. I mean, we were my dad was never home. I raised my brothers. And I went to prison just lost. There was a chaplain there in this facility because it was minimum security. There were a lot of people on their way out. They had no GED classes. They had no how to write a resume class, no how to do a job interview class. So I went to Ward and said, let me do these. And he did. And right across the parking lot was a chapel. And I never went. But the chaplain came to me and said, look at... you must be a Christian. You're doing all these great things. And I said, well, I don't know what you call me a Christian. I believe there's a God, but he's never been a major part of my life. And he said, come to church. And I explained to him about my mother. And I said, until I forgive myself for what I did to my mother, I'm not going to ask God to forgive me. And he says, Skip, you got that totally backwards.
Mm.
You ask God to forgive you, and you'll find the peace and the strength to forgive yourself.
Wow. Good for him.
Yeah. And I said no, and he kept bugging me and bugging me. We could talk and talk. I mean, we became friends. And then Christmas Eve, he brought a couple fellow inmates along and convinced me that I should come to church that night. And I told him I would only come this once, and then we were not going to talk about it anymore. And he told me it's only going to take once, Skip.
Good for him. And this guy's on track.
Yeah, he's a great guy. We're still good friends. And I walked through that doorway, and I just felt the guilt and shame just physically leave my body.
Wow.
I mean, it was amazing. And he and his wife canceled their plans, got permission from the warden, and I spent most of Christmas Eve with them praying and talking about God, and I accepted Christ as my Savior that night.
Oh, my word. And that was about when?
That was December 24th of 2005.
Oh, my word. So we're this is called You Get the Blessing, our program. I'm Bo Mitchell, the host. You've been listening to the voice of our guest today, Skip Starr, tell his incredible story about conversion at a later stage in life.
Yes, I was 58.
58 years old, and confessing here on the program that he made some bad choices that hurt people. If you're listening today and you've done that and can identify with that, then you should be feeling hope that what was available to him that night, that the chaplain invited him to chapel, is available to you. We have a God that's waiting to forgive us. We have a God that understands, basically, we're all going to fall short and make mistakes. So sin's part of the deal. Some sins don't have the consequences in other lives, other people's lives, as other sins might. You might just have a bad thought or have a drinking issue that really just affects you first before it starts affecting those around you. In Skip's case, he said what he did negatively impacted the lives of others, including brothers. And yet, at that moment in time, when you came into relationship with Christ, you had a way out of your darkness. You made a choice, and you took the way out. And I'm sure it's not been perfect since then, but it's been better.
It's been incredible. And if you just completely surrender to him, your life will change forever.
And I can tell you, having been to prison myself, that you really do have these feelings. Maybe you have them today, driving your car, sitting in your home listening to our program. But you do have these feelings that Skip and I had of just irresponsibility and
guilt. I hurt people that I loved.
Letting everybody down and
yes. Yeah.
Causing this strain and pain for people. And it's heavy on you.
Look what happened to my mother. I mean, that's all on me.
Well, you did the right thing receiving Christ, and there is comfort and there is hope in Christ, and that's where we are supposed to be placing all of our hope. So what happened since then, Skip?
Well, I should tell you, through this, when I got out, I went to halfway house and then got paroled.
Which also felt like prison.
Oh, yeah, halfway houses are terrible.
It's worse than
prison. Oh, it is. It is.
Yeah, guys sneaking out the windows, drinking,
Getting
handcuffed and hauled back to prison.
Yeah,
and
it's a nasty environment. But
it's pretty weird.
Yeah. But I got out, didn't have any place to live. I had a cousin who I'd help pay for her college education. She was like a sister to me. She's the only one that communicated with me while I was in prison. And she said, come live in my basement. She and her husband opened up here in Highlands Ranch. And so I did. And I had determined while I was in prison, God had put in my heart that I should get involved helping these people. I mean, I had so many advantages in life, a great education, just incredible experiences, toured the world, seen everything. And all these young people and older people in prison, they didn't have lives. They were there partly because they had no choice. And so God had put on my heart, you need to help them. I've given you all these talents. You need to help them. So I put together a master plan for a prison ministry when I got out. I will tell you right now that God took me in a totally different direction, but I did end up in ministry. But and I was living in my cousin's house near Cherry Hills Community Church. And I said, now that looks like a church that could sponsor me in prison ministry. So I started going there, and what was overwhelmed at first. And
it's like going to a small college football game.
Yeah, yes, yeah.
And thousands of people, yes. Because Jim Dixon and his staff are great pastors.
Oh, amazing church. God led me there, and it's been an incredible blessing for me. I was overwhelmed by the size and still guilt-ridden, still not a self-confident person at all. and went to a Tuesday morning men's group. And one of the elders there grabbed me and said, I met Mark there. One of the elders, Gary, grabbed me and said, you need to sit at this table. And I sat there, and over the last almost 5 years, that table, most of the men there did a Wednesday morning Bible study and a Thursday morning Bible study, and I started going to those, and we are so close. And so Cherry Hills is big, but it can also be incredibly close.
Intimate,
yes, totally. And so I was there for a while, and I asked around if, you know, who would be in charge of prison ministry, and they said, well, it would be Gary Sokol, City Ministries. So I went to Gary one day and said, Gary, do you have any prison ministry here? I'd like to get involved. He said, no. And I said, well, you do now. And first thing I wanted to do, because when I went to a halfway house, it was Smoky Hill Vineyard Church, did a Bible study on Thursdays at the halfway house and took me to church on Sundays. And it was a lifesaver. And so I had already called around, and I found a halfway house nearby, it was Federal and Hamden, that had no Bible study. And I said, Gary, this is the first thing I want to do. I want to do a Bible study, but they won't let me in. I can tell you, I'm on parole. So I got some couple guys from the Bible studies at the church I was doing, some other people from the church, and we started that Bible study. And we've been doing it now for 3.5 years. I'm now off parole and everything, and I lead it now. But so that was the first step in doing my ministry. There was also a women's halfway house, ACRC, that I talked to, and I've been talking to him for 2 years, and finally, 2 months ago, we started a Bible study there, and we have three women doing a Bible study, but it was just persistent. God told me that sooner, you know, he just said, keep going, you'll break them down, they'll allow it, and the women have been incredible. We have 30 women a Bible study. At the men's halfway house, we have about 10 to 12, but
And what do you call your branch of the ministry?
Well, basically, my ministry as a whole, we're in the process of reorganizing it, but my ministry is now called Refuge City Ministries. And under that ministry, we have three branches. We have Shining Star Prison Ministry, which involves the halfway houses, also assists people when they get out. I've over the last 3 years, assisted 40 ex-offenders when they get out. Also put together an investment group that buys housing to house ex-offenders. I'm not involved in it. I just brought them to the idea, and they're now doing it. We're about ready to close on a 16-unit apartment complex that'll house about 30 ex-offenders. That's the prison ministry part of my ministry.
Is that smart to put 30 ex-offenders in the same place?
There's no place to go.
I know, but
there's no place to go.
I know in the federal system, I wasn't supposed to hang out with these guys.
Right.
You didn't answer my question.
It's challenging. It's challenging. I will say that. But
as long as they have supervision, it's okay.
Yes, and it's Christian based. We do Bible studies there, and other take them to provide transportation to church.
Good.
And most of the guys involved are guys that I've met through the Bible studies at the halfway house, so I have some feel for them.
I wasn't questioning your wisdom. Just saying I was instructed, don't hang out with your former inmates felons.
Yeah, it's a violation of your parole if you do.
Yours was state or federal?
Mine was state. Mine was state.
Because I can't get back in the federal system.
I can't get in the state yet either. I have to be off parole 3 years before I can.
I didn't have any parole, but yeah. How much money was involved in your crimes?
It was about $3.5 million, of which one of the things I did was have my attorney get the judge to give me a year's time between the time I pled guilty and the time I was being sentenced so I could liquidate assets on some sort of organized basis and try to maximize what I get back to my investors. And it got down to $1.5 million, and now it's down to less than $1 million.
Good for you.
So I'm still working on it.
Good for you. I was just curious. Yeah. Somewhere there's a judge named Ed Setting that knows I didn't lose $1 of money.
Yeah, I've heard your story.
But he still decided I needed to go to federal prison for 11 months, so I guess he could feel better about something, but never made sense to me.
Well, I'm glad I went. I tell people now it's the greatest thing that ever happened to me because I found Christ there.
And was me too, spiritually.
Yeah, I would
but
never.
There are still prices we pay 20 years later.
Yeah, but I'm poorer than I've ever been, but I'm never been happier.
Or more rich.
Or yes, exactly. Never been richer.
So your ministry day in and day out, how can people help you and get in touch with you?
Well, there's a website. You can go to Skip at RefugeCityMinistries.org or ShiningStarMinistries.org, either one. The other part of our ministry that we do in Englewood is we've started a community center for homeless youth. There's a Urban Peak as a shelter for homeless youth. We work with them, partnered with Denver First Church on that. We also, at that same community center, work with one of the alternative high schools and provide on Saturdays a place for the high school kids to go. And on Tuesday nights, we provide free dinner for homeless families and just disadvantaged families. And then Denver First Church has a couple activities that they're on Mondays and Fridays. So it's a neat ministry that we haven't got all those programs going, but within the next couple months, they'll all be going. We're still sort of in the remodeling stage. Just got the building 3 weeks ago. But still.
So you're very well-spoken, and you are trained as a professional, attorney and accountant.
Yes.
You're also a really good salesman. I can feel it across the table here. And yet God's taken all that blend and brought it together through a lot of pain for you to now use it to his glory.
Yes. Yeah, and yes. And
so are you getting to preach a lot, teach a lot, lead these Bible studies?
Yeah, I lead Bible studies, and I can't go to the women's Bible study. Even though I'm off parole, they consider me still too bad a felon to go in there. But we have some great women Christians that are doing that are just fantastic. And we do the Bible study. We do the Bible study for the kids at the community center. So I'm involved in it a lot. And I would let the audience know that my family and I are totally back together again.
Really?
I've been forgiven by my brothers. I'm the primary caregiver for my mom. And
good.
Yeah. It was a blessing. Took them a little while, but we're back together and doing well.
Well, it's a pleasure for me to hear your story and also hear what you're doing. So listeners, you feel like you're trapped in your own prison today, listen to Skip Starr's story about the literal prison he was in, same way I was in a literal prison, but there are so many more prisons. You may be trapped in a prison of unbelief, for starters. You may think what we're talking about here in terms of Jesus Christ is just a bunch of baloney. That's the greatest prison you can be in. Or you may be a Christian and be trapped in the prison of prayerlessness, or disobedience, or who knows, whatever kind of addiction you might be involved with. And know this can be a prison break for you today. You can choose Christ, you can choose his power to forgive you, and you can choose to get up, look forward, and say, if someone asks you today, how you doing? Never better. This is my best day, not because of anything I've done, but because of Christ. So Skip, thank you for your testimony and for sharing with us, and thank you for what you're doing with your life. What are we looking most forward to in terms of your ministry and what's ahead? And then we want to give out information again how people can get involved with you. So first, what are you looking forward to?
Well, we this community center and getting it up and running and fully impacted. And then we have another ministry with youth that we deal with, incarcerated youth, run by Lucas Rosentrater, a young man that came from Youth for Christ. And that ministry is just about ready to really take off. And so we'd like a lot of prayers for that, too.
Everybody at First Church that has stepped forward and helped Skip Starr with these ministries, thank you. And let's go with phone numbers, websites. How can people donate money, get in touch with you, find out more?
You can call me anytime at 303-517-6767.
How'd you get that number? That sounds like something a crook would have to get.
I was just fortunate. God blessed me with it. And then
517-6767, area code 303.
Yes. And then you can go, like I said, to Refuge City Ministries or ShiningStarMinistries.org, and you can donate there. Or
RefugeMinistries.org.
RefugeCityMinistries.org.
RefugeCityMinistries.org.
Yes.
And you find out what all they're up to.
Yeah, all the ministries are described there.
What size check would you like to see come in from somebody?
I have no, I don't care. Whatever their heart leads them to do is more than I could ask for.
I gave you a chance right there to say $10,000.
That doesn't matter to me. It does not matter to me.
Any amount, folks, whatever you have.
Whatever's in your heart.
But I would say this, to something like this, see if you can give sacrificially, decide, you know what, I'm glad he's doing that and I don't have to do it. I can keep doing what I'm doing in business and be more successful there and write a check to help Skip do what for good he's been trained to do through the hardship of his story and to do well. So I hope somebody will respond and step forward. And listeners, thank you for considering that right now, yes. Wherever you are.
Yes, thank you.
You're a good guy and a good guest, and your life's a testimony to the forgiving power of God. He's into fresh starts and new beginnings.
Amen to that.
And you've had one, haven't you?
Oh, incredible one. Yes.
So it looks to me like you're young, 67.
Well, I try to stay healthy. I'm a big tennis player. Played a lot of tennis.
And that food in prison's incredible.
Oh, yeah. I mean, seriously. Well, I was fortunate because we lived on the farm, and there was a fish farm right next to us, so we had fresh fish every afternoon for lunch.
Oh, brother.
And it was not the hard prison life.
We had worms cooked into our dinner, so right out of Shawshank, I experienced that firsthand. Hey, thanks, Skip Starr, special guest today.
God bless.
And thanks for tuning in. We'll see you all next week here on You Get the Blessing.